Hello, everybody. My name is Daniel Prince, and I am the host of the Once Bitten podcast. This is a podcast focused on Bitcoin. It's my mission to interview as many people as I can around the different aspects of Bitcoin and help people understand exactly what Bitcoin could mean for them and for their families and for their future. I hope you enjoy the show. Thank you so much for listening. Hello, everybody. Welcome to this episode of the Once Bitten podcast. Joining me on today's show is Brian Consolvo. Now, this is an important one because Brian works for KPMG. We had to go to make sure that we could do this episode. We had to go through the correct channels, and we did get the green light, and we have been able to drop this audio as a podcast. So thank you, everybody over at KPMG, for backing Brian's work and for understanding the importance of everything that he's trying to do from within your company there. Now Brian wrote a piece about Bitcoin. It's titled Bitcoin's Role in the ESG Imperative. Discover the ESG impact of Bitcoin and the misconceptions it may pose in the market. This is a critically important piece of the puzzle to helping people understand that Bitcoin mining is not bad for the environment and can actually play a crucial role in taking us forward as a civilization, as a global population, carry humanity into the next phase as we evolve onto this new monetary network and monetary standard that has been discovered, which is Bitcoin. And Brian does a great job of laying this out. And from the company of KPMG, he carries so much weight behind that. And I wanted to get him on the show to talk through his thinking. Was he mandated to write this piece, his rabbit hole journey, and all of that good stuff that goes with it. So thank you, Brian, for coming on and stepping up and releasing this work. And thank you, KPMG, for allowing us to have this conversation and to release it. So all of that said, thank you as well to you guys for listening, all of the plebs out there that share this message as far as wide as you can every single day. I know you're out there doing your bit, trying to make sure that people are understanding and busting the FUD. And I hope this article goes a long way to help you orange pill some other people in your life. Now, before you get into the interview, there's a few announcements. Show sponsors, please make sure you're stacking sats with Bitcoin-only companies. In the US, you can use Swan. In Europe, you can use Relay. Both companies are completely and totally dedicated to helping you understand Bitcoin just as much as they possibly can, as well as helping you access it too. HODL, HODL are global. They're a peer-to-peer trading platform and lending platform. Head over to HODL, HODL, hit the link in the show notes, create an account, and save yourself some commissions. Wasabi Wallet are going to help you with your coin joining. They offer a great service, wasabiwallet.io. Just go over, create a wallet, and run some Satoshis through it. Coin join happens by default. Bitbox is your place, final place for storage, cold storage, not your keys, not your coins. Do not be buying any Bitcoin ETFs. Make sure you do your own research. But the Bitbox O2 is a great piece of hardware, brought to you by the Shift Crypto Gang over in Switzerland. Hit the link in the show notes, use the code BITTEN, and you'll get a 5% discount. Lastly, mempool.space is the place to go to check out the Bitcoin blockchain and what's going on in the mempool and track the transaction fees. Dig into one of the blocks, see what's going on in there. It's not good. Finally, get to Madeira, 1st to the 3rd of March. Use the code BITTEN, come say hello, you'll get 10% discount. Enjoy this one with Brian. All right, Brian, we are recording. Great to meet you.
Yep, you too.
So Lauren's here, and she's been asking me, what does Brian do? What's who is this person that we're about to interview? And I've said, well, it's a cool story because he works for KPMG. Yeah, blank look. So she's,
I don't think I had already heard of KPMG either at that age.
No, exactly. But then I had to go deeper and explain. It's a very interesting story because we've got a guy here that works for one of the big four. That's the kind of terminology that's being kicked about. Okay, consultancy groups, and he wrote a paper about Bitcoin and ESG, which is about environmental concerns and whatever else, in a positive matter, in a positive manner, excuse me. And that was huge. So do you have a question to ask Brian about his work and why he decided to do that and what he found and what led him there?
Is it all right if I ask what KPMG is?
Yeah, so KPMG is a global accounting firm. As your dad mentioned, we're referred to as the Big Four because there's basically four large accounting firms that basically provide all the audit, tax, advisory services, let's just say mainly to like public companies. It used to be the Big Five, and then that was reduced to four. So if you I guess to put it in a nutshell, what the Big Four ultimately do, if you think about public companies that issue financial statements, that basically explains to investors the general financial health of a company, and then investors make really important decisions with their capital based on those financial statements. But if one company says they make $1 billion, how do you know they really made $1 billion? You don't want to just take their word for it. So firms like KPMG will come in and perform an audit of those financial statements to make sure that everything in there looks good and is complete and accurate so that investors can have reliable information to make their decisions on. And that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Sounds hard. Sounds very mathy.
It's a lot of that. That's actually not the part of the business I'm in anymore. I am not a CPA. So like we have audit tax advisory. So there's a whole other kind of side to the story that KPMG does more than just the audit piece. But I think when people think of Big Four, that's generally what they refer to.
All right. So now you're up to speed on who the Big Four are and what they do.
Now you're an expert.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, but you're right. It's a lot of research. It's a lot of writing reports. It's a lot of, and if you're in accounting, a lot of math. Basically trying to figure out the truth behind a company's statements. Yeah?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Yeah. Well, thank you for your question.
Thank you so much for answering.
You're very welcome.
Yes. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, let's stick here, Brian. What led you there? What happened for you growing up? Why did you decide this career path? Was there something else before this? There's always a Fiat career path story in there somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, I had a pretty traditional career path, I guess you could say. I went to graduate from James Madison University back in 2004. I actually wrestled there for 4 or 5 years that I was there. And then when I got out, I went to actually work at one of the other Big Four up in Northern Virginia. And I was only there for a couple years, worked at the Northern Virginia office they have. And then I actually transferred out to California and worked in their Southern California office. But then I decided to move back home, kind of home, to Virginia Beach. And KPMG was the only Big Four in town back then. And I was only 2 years in my career and I realized, you know, I wanted to keep doing that work. So I made the switch over to KPMG. And it's obviously, I've been here a long time now. I think I've been here just a little over 17 years. So it's been a great company to work for. A lot of really great people that I've learned a ton from. And that's kind of just the general path, you know, your typical ups and downs of a 17-year career. Lots of learning opportunities, a number of mistakes probably made, but that's what led me here.
So for those, you know, many of us have heard of the Big Four, you know, in the circles, but none of us have really been behind the scenes. None of us really know that the nature of your work. I mean, we gave a little overview there for Lauren, but you know, the plebs, Brian, they like to get a little deeper and understand what's really going on, you know, in the trenches there. So you were doing accounting at one stage and helping with that side of things or not?
So maybe I'll just take a step back and give an overview of kind of how the company is structured. So as I mentioned, it's KPMG is structured by audit, tax, and advisory. And I've been on the advisory side my entire career. But there was a point for the vast majority of it up until very recently where my group within the advisory practice was supporting the audits that we were doing as a firm for a number of companies, and that was doing IT audit work. So I had a kind of a very specific remit, I guess you could say, as it relates to what we were doing. So if you think about all these systems that companies use to process transactions, to process financial statements, reports, et cetera, you have to have controls in place. And my team would come in to test those controls as part of the audit. And this is something that if you get into, I don't know how familiar you are with SOX, which is a regulation for public companies here in the United States, where they have to actually test controls themselves. And then the auditors come in and will do the testing as well. So you're kind of being hit from both sides. And then, so there's some companies where we would actually do the testing on behalf of management. And then if you're doing the external audit, you're testing those controls in support of your financial statement audit. So that's...
I was going to ask. I was going to ask the clients.
A lot of questions.
The clients that you're doing this for. How did I view KPMG?
Auditors.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised. Like the relationships with auditors and their clients is actually pretty good. I think most people realize, like, look, this is something we have to do. I think sometimes there's some differing opinions on what is sufficient evidence for an audit and things like that. But generally speaking, I think the relationships are usually really good. But that's one piece, right? So then, you know, there's a whole tax side that I can't really speak to because I don't have any understanding hardly of tax. But then the advisory side is what you can think of as your traditional consultants. So like when you think about consultants that are going to do whatever it is at a particular client, that's what our advisory group does. So they kind of do anything and everything. Some of the stuff that we've done, my group particularly, and I'm in what's called our technology risk group. So that sits within our advisory practice more broadly. we'll do IT risk assessments. If you think about some of the crypto companies out there and some of the things that they've been doing over the past few years, we've helped them prepare to go public. So when they decide they want to do a public offering, there's a lot of regulatory requirements and things that they need to get in order before they do that. So we've helped with that. There's SOC 1 and SOC 2 reports, which are very common in this space. So if you think about a custody provider, they're going to need to have a SOC 1 report to give their customers assurances over all of the controls they have in place around their private keys, for example. We've also done a number of risk assessments for even legacy financial companies who are in the process or have rolled out various crypto-related products and services. They usually don't want to just move forward with something like that. You can imagine, just given the nature of digital assets as a whole, comes with a quite a bit of risk and things that a lot of people in legacy companies might not have the skill sets for.
So what led you down to the Bitcoin rabbit hole then in the first place?
Yeah, so I guess my story is not like a lot of others. I think it was something that I had heard about a number of years ago and very quickly dismissed it. I was like, oh, this is just, you know, sounds like magic internet money. I don't know why, but I thought it was something that like was really popular in the online gaming community. I'm like, oh, these people are just trying to create some sort of, you know, currency for whatever reason. And that was literally it. Like, this is me just kind of forming an opinion based on some headlines I had probably read. So I dismissed it. And then it was probably 2019 or so. I was at a training for work and was sitting at lunch with a couple guys who started talking about it. And I was like, wow, this is still around? Like, you know, tell me more. And the more I started to hear about it, I decided, okay, let me go do my own research on this. And yeah, like you said, just went down the rabbit hole. I started consuming like literally anything I could find. I just became very fascinated with it. Ironically enough, one of the first podcasts I came across was yours. So really? It's kind of interesting how this, yeah, it's kind of interesting how this kind of, you know, come full circle. But I think from there, we got to around, I'd say late 2020, definitely early 2021. And we were starting to see a lot of market activity that KPMG was now being brought to the table on. So there, it was really exciting at that time to kind of take what was sort of a side hobby and then blend it in with my everyday work. And then you start to get pulled into various discussions. And it's just one of those things where, I mean, if you're going to go have conversations with clients about it, you can't just understand how Bitcoin works. You have to understand how the underlying technology works. You have to understand the regulatory concerns that come with it. It's this multifaceted, multi-discipline set of topics that I was just wading into uncharted territory on. So it was really fun. And it's just been remarkable when I think back, like how much I've had to learn. It's been like drinking from a fire hose. And every time you think you start to really understand the entire space, you quickly realize how little you really know, just because there's so much to it. So yeah, I think that's the general story for me over the past, I guess, 4 or 5 years.
Which is interesting, sitting in a position like yours, where you are a researcher and you like to, you know, delve into things and understand things, and you have to, right? If you're going to serve your clients as well as you can, and the nature of the business that you're in as well, and your timing. So let's say mid 2019, you start digging around, you find the Bitcoin standard, a few pods, whatever, and you're going down the rabbit hole, and you, like the rest of us, you're like, what? You're waking up at 3 a.m. He's like, oh, wait. You know? So, but then September 2020, MicroStrategy dropped the news. Had you been thinking leading up until that point, had you been thinking it can only be a matter of time before a publicly listed company like takes this onto their balance sheet? Or was that thought not even close to crossing your mind at that point?
Yeah, I hadn't really given it much thought. I think, you know, back then there was some talk about, okay, in this next cycle, could you start to see more institutions get involved? And it was really my first cycle. So I didn't really have an opinion on it. Every day it was just sort of, you know, take it as you go. But yeah, I remember where I was when that announcement was made, and that was pretty shocking. I was like, wow, this is really happening. I think what's interesting is you haven't really seen a lot of companies, you know, since then get in. I wonder if that could potentially change on this next cycle, but there's some what I would say very favorable accounting treatment that has been passed by the FASB. I think that goes into effect 2025, or will be in effect as of 2025. That might encourage more companies to put it on their balance sheet, just given the not so advantageous accounting treatment that digital assets have had up to date. So yeah, that was a big moment. It'll be interesting to see if some others follow suit.
And a whole new area of business for companies like yourself, right? Now, it has to be now on the it's got to be front of mind in-house across all big four. How are we set up going into 2024 to be able to advise companies that want to take Bitcoin onto their balance sheet? Are we ready for this? Do we have the right people in place? There has to be conversations going on.
Yeah, I think right now, though, my personal opinion here is the industry as a whole, I think, is still recovering from everything that happened in 2022. So I think this is kind of fallen by the wayside. I think you probably had a lot of those companies start to think about that maybe in the 2021, maybe early 2022 timeframe. So I think the ETF, if that's going to get approved, which could be any day now, I think that's something that could maybe bring the spotlight back onto the digital assets space in general. Because it's funny, a buddy of mine was with some friends recently, and he mentioned Bitcoin to them, and they're like, wait a minute, you still pay attention to that stuff? So I think that's a very common perception with people, where I think everything that happened last year, I think people just assumed that they wrote it off, quite frankly. And I think it sort of left a black eye on the industry, but I think it started to sort of come out of that dark space, you know? And I think it's going to potentially reposition itself a little bit better in 2024.
Right. So now that brings us to the ESG narrative that Bitcoiners have been kind of very skeptical of for many, many months, if not years, prior to you coming out of the woodwork, so to speak, and dropping your article, which reverberated around the community. First of all, what led you down? Were you mandated to do that in-house? Was that something you had to do? Or
No, definitely right. Not mandated. That was something that I chose personally to do and was able to get it published. So it was an exciting paper to do, but yeah, definitely not mandated.
So what made you do it? What was the reason?
So I think for me, you know, I had followed this space so closely that I was, you know, really just surprised at some of the common misconceptions that were still out there that I was still seeing. I think just going beyond Bitcoin's energy consumption and seeing how it can be used for things like, you know, methane mitigation, demand response, potentially helping with the transition to more renewable energy sources, recycled heat, you know, just a number of different things like that. And I just think there were so many things missing from the conversation that I wanted to put something together that could start to help our clients think about some of the positive ESG opportunities that came with Bitcoin mining that obviously I laid out in the paper. I currently lead one of our emerging technology COEs. And so one of the topics that, you know, has been at the forefront for the past couple of years is Bitcoin and crypto. So I came up with the idea for the article just based on some of the topics that I, you know, planned to cover this past year. And I think that idea just sort of came to me early in 2022, or excuse me, 2023. And I was able to start to put some stuff together, partner with, you know, one of my colleagues from our ESG group who was able to provide some really good insights and things that I just wasn't even aware of. And helped also just kind of keep me honest, right? Like I went into the paper with maybe some preconceived notions and I told him, I'm like, hey, make sure like I'm not being biased here or call me out if there's something that I'm, you know, maybe not fully educated on. So it was a really good learning experience for me as well.
So just to back up, for those people listening, and I'm sorry if I jumped the gun there, on the acronym ESG, if you just want to explain to those that are listening that might be scratching their heads.
Yeah, so ESG stands for environmental social governance, and it's something that has gotten a lot of attention over the past couple of years, and it's become very important for companies that are looking to reduce their carbon footprint, diversity, equity, inclusion type initiatives, and then just a governance aspect of it. So it's just running your company in a much more fair and equitable way, I guess you could say. Obviously, I think, though, the E is what has probably garnered the most attention out of the ESG acronym. So obviously, if you look at the paper, that's obviously where a lot of the examples are more heavily focused, too.
Yeah, exactly. And the title, for those that want to go and dig it out, I'll put the link in the show notes as well. Bitcoin's role in the ESG imperative: discover the ESG impact of Bitcoin and the misconceptions it may pose in the market. So, positive reactions. Who was first on the email box, and who was first on the call, and like, you know, who wanted to talk to you?
So yeah, I was pretty taken aback by the response. I was on vacation when the paper got published, and the emails and LinkedIn messages just came in like a flurry. Just people from all over the world, really. I mean, it ranged from a number of, you know, very prominent people in the space that were excited to see the paper to, you know, people even just within my own company who were like, hey, this is amazing. I didn't know that KPMG would ever publish something like this. This is such, it's so great to see. And I think people just appreciate the fact that it was a more balanced view of some of the things that Bitcoin mining can do. And it's not just, hey, Bitcoin consuming, you know, this much energy or that much energy. So it went a bit deeper. And the other thing I tried to do when I wrote the paper is I wanted to make sure that everything I was putting in there was factual. I didn't want to offer any of my own personal opinions. I wasn't trying to convince someone to go out and buy Bitcoin. It was, look, here's what it is, and here's some of the things that are actually happening in the market. Some very novel use cases around methane mitigation, reducing methane, or using methane that's being emitted from landfills. I mean, that was something when, you know, I started looking at it, and some of the charts that I included in the paper that show the amount of emissions kind of broken down by segment. You know, landfills, I didn't even realize going into it how much landfills contribute to greenhouse gas emissions. So then when I start to hear that there are companies out there that are mining Bitcoin with methane coming from landfills, I mean, that just seems like a win-win. That was something that was, you know, very surprising to me. And I think most people would never even think of it. I mean, just, it's so counterintuitive when you start looking at the benefits that Bitcoin could potentially offer for renewable energy.
What was your favorite discovery when you were digging around in it? I mean,
I think it was probably that one.
Yeah.
That was one, and it kind of came up at the, you know, last week or two that we were finalizing the paper. and I think that's something now that I think there was one of the big miners is doing a pilot in Utah doing this as well. So yeah, I just think the big question will be is, can that be something that gets done at scale, right? It seems like, I mean, I don't think it's something that's happening in a meaningful way at the moment, but I think it's also something that everyone is just sort of uncovering as a way that they can mine Bitcoin and also reduce emissions from landfills at the same time. I think there's probably some infrastructure that might be expensive to build out there, but hey, technology has a way of doing some pretty remarkable things. So I'm pretty excited to see how this starts to evolve over the coming years.
Have you ever been out to a site to have a look around?
No, that's on my to-do list because it seems like it's pretty interesting. When I was down at the North American Blockchain Summit down in Texas in November, they actually had they had a tour that they were taking people out there. I didn't realize it until the last minute, so I wasn't able to go. But they were taking some of the attendees out to one of the mining sites and showing some of the things under the hood, which sounded like it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I'm trying to picture it in my mind. Obviously, a landfill, like you dig a big pit in the ground and then you tip a load of rubbish in it, cover it back over, and the methane seeps out through the soil and into the atmosphere. How would you capture it all and then run it through like Bitcoin mining machines?
Yes, I tried to do some research on it to understand, because I had that exact same thought. You know, how are they actually doing this? And I was trying to just visually picture what it would look like. But I wasn't able to find a whole lot on it. But I'd love to go out to like a big landfill site where they're doing it and just see the mining rigs hooked up and how it all works.
So does anybody like in your normal friend group ever ask you about this kind of stuff? Like that they must know you're a consultant at KPMG, and maybe they know that you wrote a piece about Bitcoin and the environment. And of course it's all bad, right? Because the newspapers and the media tells us it's boiling the oceans.
Yeah. So I definitely have a few friends that I'm really close with that are pretty in tune to this space. And, you know, I've kind of educated them a bit on things, like in group chats and things like that, where we'll go back and forth on stuff. So they follow it. So I think some of them know about it. I'm sure others probably might not even some of my closest friends probably have no idea that I even wrote the paper. So I think there's just still a huge segment of the population that, you know, they're just unaware that this stuff's even happening. But hopefully that's, you know, that was one of the goals in writing the paper, is to bring some of this awareness to people so that, you know, they understand that, like you said, it's more than just some of the headlines you might be reading. There's a lot of really good public utility that we're starting to see here.
Do you feel as though, since you've written that and dropped that piece, that it's inspired other researchers, either within KPMG or within your competitors, or even investigative journalism, to start digging into it as well? Have any of those folks reached out?
Good question. There's been a number of folks who have reached out and wanted to, you know, collaborate on a second paper, something along, you know, the same lines of like demand response or methane mitigation. In terms of the competitors, I don't know. I haven't seen them put out anything along these lines. So I think KPMG was definitely a first mover there. But I know it's been shared with a number of different, you know, policymakers, regulators. I know it's been kind of a go-to that people have told me when, you know, they're having some of these conversations. And like I said, you still have some of these preconceived notions of, you know, the drawbacks of Bitcoin mining, that they can share this. And I also tried to put the paper together in a way that was easy to consume, because there are some studies out there that if you read it and you don't have a really good foundational understanding of how Bitcoin mining works, what Bitcoin mining even is, I mean, a lot of this stuff's just going to be over your head. So I tried to do it in a way that was easy to digest, that someone could pick it up and have at least a general understanding of how it all works, even if they weren't, let's say, a hardcore Bitcoiner. So I think some of that stuff it's still circulating around.
What sector in your mind do you think is going to be like that should be knocking down the doors of KPMG to you know, come and advise us? How do we get Bitcoin mining up and running and let's go?
Well, I think Bitcoin miners themselves are starting to become, you know, pretty big companies. And I know some of them have started to go public. So I think that's probably a perfect match right there for, you know, various consulting services, whether it's for IPO readiness or like I said, once you go public, that starts to require that company to test SOX controls on an annual basis, which is a very big undertaking as part of the financial statement audit. So that's, I think, one of the obvious things. I think the other area that, you know, we could see is, you know, investment companies that might be, if any of these companies start to custody their own assets, that's another area that KPMG can help with. You know, I think there's only a couple big custodians out there, which starting to become fairly centralized. So I think that's a trend that I'll probably be keeping an eye on the coming years, especially if we get an ETF, which is all going back to that same custodian for the most part. Mm-hmm. Will other companies either A, start to custody it themselves, or will more custodians start to enter that market? I think that's going to be a trend that's going to be really interesting coming next couple of years.
Or you're going to head up KPMG's custodian arm?
Yeah, maybe KPMG does. I don't know.
It would make sense, right? I mean, you're an auditing company after all.
I guess it was, 2 years ago, our KPMG Canada firm made an announcement that they had bought Bitcoin and Ethereum. So we have a really good digital asset practice in Canada, but the way the member firms work is they're almost like completely separate companies in a way. But that was out in the media as just KPMG, and a lot of people don't make the distinction that it was actually our KPMG Canada firm.
You would imagine that, like, your auditing team, your accounting buffs, this would just like set them on fire, surely. It's like, what do you mean every 10 minutes? Like, it takes me weeks to file this research.
Some of the accounting stuff is pretty technical. I mean, even with my understanding, I get on calls with them and I'm like, wow, this stuff is, and it's just very different than traditional assets. So it's kind of opened up a whole new world for accounting, tax, and advisory. So I mean, the tax stuff is just way over my head with all the different regulatory requirements that have started coming out around that. But we have a really good tax group that's focused on that. So we kind of cover the whole gamut of anything related to digital assets that companies are going to need help with. So hopefully this ETF kind of brings more attention back to the space, and I think can hopefully fuel adoption a bit better.
All right. So we talked about positive feedback, people reaching out, really happy to see it. It hit the headlines there. Negative feedback. Can remain silent if silence says it all, you know what I mean? Up to you what you're able to divulge.
So I wouldn't really say I've received much criticism, to be honest with you. Now, I'm sure there are some people who have differing views, but they've not made them known to me. And like I said, when I set out to write the paper, my intent was not to speculate on anything. So I wanted to make it as hard as possible to argue with or disagree with anything that was going in there, because my goal was to purely present just what the facts were. You know, if I'm going to highlight in the paper that, hey, there's a company that's helping with demand response and helping to balance grids, and that's what's happening, let's say, down in Texas, and I'm quoting the CEO of ERCOT, who manages the Texas grid, that's very difficult to argue with. Like, that's just what it is. Like, if you want to argue, then you'll need to argue with him. But I tried to also just use, you know, reputable sources. You know, I wasn't using, you know, if you look at all the citations in there, I'm not attributing my work to, let's say, a bunch of Bitcoin publications, because that could be a bit of a conflict of interest. So I recognize that, you know, a lot of the readers of the report might not have a deep understanding of some of those topics. So I try, like I said, I just try to put it in layman's terms, really lay it out for people to make it easy to understand. But again, I wanted to avoid at all costs, like offering opinions on things or even giving my opinion on where things were going or where or whatnot, because again, that could be something that somebody has a strong disagreement with.
You mean you weren't quoting American HODL in there and, you know, snapshots of the Twitter?
Yeah, I tried to avoid all the big Twitter personalities. Figured that'd be a quick way to get myself into some hot water.
So you mentioned doing a follow-up paper. Let's go. Hurry up. We want to see it. No pressure, of course, but we're keen.
I think it would be hard to live up to this one. So I don't have any plans at the moment to do, let's say, a follow-up paper. I mean, I haven't ruled anything out. I what I've done in terms of the publications we've issued, especially those related to crypto, is I don't want to do something for the sake of just getting something out. I think sometimes people are in the industry as a whole always just want to put something out. Let's just get something out, get our name out there. But I only want to really do something if I think it's going to have some teeth to it, and it's going to be something that's really going to resonate with the industry and has some sort of specific purpose that needs to be told. So I think that's why I'm kind of just waiting and seeing at this point. You know, there's just no telling where things could go this year, but you know, if the ETF's approved, I do think that could start to open up the doors to a number of potential follow-up papers. Maybe we'll see how it goes. Like we did a state of crypto back in fall of last year, which really just kind of again broke it down everything that had happened with FTX and you know the Terra Luna debacle and everything in between. And I think you know that resonated with people. But then after that, it's like, okay, let's just see what happens. I didn't want to just put something out for the sake of doing it.
Yeah, exactly. And like it's so difficult, right? Well, actually, here's a question. You've led me right to it. Bitcoin, not crypto. It obviously you understand the difference. I'm assuming that is still misunderstood within.
It is.
Right. Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's you still. I get on calls, various people still to this day, and it's the opposite. It's blockchain, not crypto. They want to talk about, and you know, I'm still surprised that we're still having those conversations about using blockchain for supply chain management and putting our healthcare records on a blockchain. I'm not saying that can't be done. So I always try to tell people like I have strong opinions on this, loosely held. But yeah, I just don't really see a whole lot of use case for blockchain outside of digital assets.
Well, it's funny. I was supposed to be doing a podcast with Parker Lewis just last night.
Yeah.
He had to reschedule. But for anybody out there, go and check out, you know, Bitcoin Not Blockchain, because that is one of his Gradually Then Suddenly series and in his new book, which has just dropped as well. And even he would say that was probably the hardest article he's ever written, or the hardest part of the chapter, getting people to understand the difference, like, you know, Bitcoin Not Blockchain.
Yeah, I think people still conflate those things quite a bit. And what I always try to tell people when they're wanting to highlight some use case for blockchain is you have to go back to why the Bitcoin blockchain was created in the first place. Because if you don't understand what problem it was solving for, then you really just start to look like a hammer looking for a nail, in my opinion, with just, hey, we can use blockchain for this. And I feel like back in 2015, 2016, we already went through that. It was blockchain, not crypto. It was companies pouring quite a bit of investment into blockchain, you know, CUEs and blockchain groups. And here we are today, 8 or 9 years later, and there's nothing really to show for it. I think some of these big companies that had blockchain segments have shuttered those projects. And I think they were, and the other thing I'll tell people is like, look, you can use blockchain for things, but it doesn't mean it's better than what it's replacing. I mean, the whole point of a blockchain in Bitcoin is to have permissionless transactions without any intermediaries. And if you start putting a centralized blockchain together, you're just going right back to a centralized database. And it's funny because you get on a lot of these calls and you say that and you see the look in their eyes and they're just like, yeah, you're right. But they, you know, they feel so like disheartened that, you know, they're sort of coming to that realization.
Yeah. I mean, people want it. They need it to be a big thing, right? Because there's going to be a whole new sector to consult for and to, you know, make money from, essentially.
That's right. I think that's right.
Yeah. I remember going to a blockchain cringe conference somewhere in London. Goodness knows when that was, 2017, I think. Yeah. And, you know, people are up there, dental records on the blockchain, yeah. Shipping on the blockchain, all of it. And you're just sitting there thinking, and only one guy spoke about Bitcoin in the whole conference. And he's like, you know, anybody else in the room ever bought any Bitcoin? And like, mine was the only hand that went up.
Yeah.
I'm looking around everybody else. I'm like, oh my God, really? Like,
yeah.
So you're all here for the blockchain thing, but nobody has even bought any Bitcoin yet.
Well, people love to chase the new shiny object. And at one point, blockchain was certainly that. And I think the other thing, too, is because blockchain technology as a whole is not the easiest thing to understand right away. It's not like you can just, you know, read a quick article or two on blockchain and understand it. Like for me, at least, it took me a while. And, I was listening to podcasts, I was reading stuff, and every time I'd pick up a little bit more. And then finally, you get this aha moment where you're like, okay, I get it. But then you realize very quickly that, okay, all these other things you want to do, yeah, like I'll listen to people who pitch the idea that they want to put XYZ on a blockchain because it makes it immutable. I'm like, okay, immutability's great, but you can more or less make immutability on even a centralized database. That's only one component. Unless you're hitting all the different components that blockchain is offering, you don't really need it in the first place. And I think there's just been so many smart people in this space and so many companies that have put in so many millions, if not billions of dollars, if I recall, they would have found a use case by now for some of these things, and it would have happened. The fact that it hasn't, I think, tells you everything. And the only use case that we still have today is for digital assets.
Yeah. All right. You've mentioned the ETF a couple of times here. If that gets the green light, who do you expect to be calling it? You know, will the phones ring off the hook? Like, you know, okay, there's an ETF. We want to buy some of this thing and put it on our company balance sheet. Or, you know, what do you think is going to happen for KPMG?
Yeah, that's hard to say. I won't even begin to speculate on that. I think my personal view is just that it could bring some validity back to the asset class. And I think more companies might start to take a look at it again if the ETF's approved, just because I think that would be, you know, a pretty monumental moment. But in terms of how KPMG fits into that, I think time will tell.
All right. Well, who knows, man? I don't know if it's smoke and mirrors or what else, you know, personal opinions, like you really don't know what's going on. And for any of the plebs listening, just stack your sats and self-custody. Don't get caught up in the ETF. But you swim in a different circle. You're going to have a lot of professional people calling up with a lot of interesting questions and a lot of confusion, quite frankly, because they've been told for the last 15 years by Wall Street that this is absolutely, just for criminals and terrorists, and don't touch it with a barge pole, and it's a Ponzi scheme up until now, and there's 13 ETF filings at the SEC. Like the U-turn on the narrative has been incredible.
Yeah, and I think just having some reputable companies now in this space might bring some kind of trust and assurances to people that might be looking to invest in it. So that'll be the other thing that could change the tides a bit.
Yeah, man. Who's it's going to be? 24 is going to be absolutely incredible. So, where to take it now? I think we've covered what the role is at KPMG, behind the scenes, why you wrote the paper, the feedback. You've, I believe, started appearing at conferences and getting up on panels.
Yeah, we've done a couple panels and conferences, which has been really fun and exciting, giving me an opportunity to meet some really interesting folks in the community. But yeah, we'll see what's next. I think things are starting to die down a bit, and we'll see where things go in 2024.
So I'm sure you're aware, and I think you've already been in touch with Lyudmila from the Open Dialogue Foundation, with her work over here, with regards to, you know, what the EU are trying to do, with regards to banning proof of work mining in Europe. And you'd be pleased to know, I'm sure you already do, that your article went a long way to helping them put together a crafted, well-crafted and factual, it's not even narrative, right? If it's factual, dossier to along with other people as well, to go and try and help these regulators see through the FUD. This is something that not a lot of people pay much attention to, but like the fact that if you ban proof of work mining here in Europe, then de facto you're going to completely cut them off at the knees of their work with their human rights initiatives, because they would not be allowed to send funds across to, again, this word, unhosted wallets in other parts of the world without being seen as funding terrorism. And it's just such a fine line that we're treading. And it's just incredibly frustrating when, you know, your work is out there and you've laid out the facts and you can see like the bright orange future. If we were just to harness this technology and use it to, you know, take that methane out of the air and use it to run the miners and give it a revenue stream to that landfill operator to then build out the infrastructure and whatever else that they need to do to make it better, or stabilizing grids, as you said, in Texas, stabilizing microgrids, you know, having small towns, communities just completely safe now from any surges or blackouts. I mean, this is so, if you've seen it, you can't unsee it, you know, and it's very, well, of course, you know, it's very frustrating sometimes, and you must feel those same frustrations, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I think that's just why I always bring it back to education, right? It's just such a difficult topic to understand. Like, if I put myself in the shoes of various policymakers, the amount that they're having to deal with even outside of Bitcoin is probably, you know, insurmountable. Now you're having this new, I say new, I mean, it's been around for 15 years now, but this new technology that requires you to do a pretty extensive deep dive on how blockchain works. You have the illicit illegal finance headline that is very easy to circulate. I think some of these things are just very difficult for people to get their head around. So I think that's just one of the challenges that I personally think has slowed adoption over the past, let's just say, 5-10 years. But I think that will, I think, slowly start to evolve. I think regulations, I mean, it's just going to be interesting to see where regulations go, because I think right now it's not real clear. I know in the United States, there's a couple different bills that are in the making, but where those bills go, I obviously don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Your mic went a little funny there. I'm not sure what's happened, but
it's better.
A little bit robotic for some reason. Right. Well, I was getting towards the final question anyway. If you had one last orange pill left to give to somebody, who would you give it to and why? And I am sorry, plebs, for that dramatic pause. But as you could hear, we were having problems with Brian's mic towards the end there. And the answer to the orange pill question, you're going to have to go find out for yourself. You're going to have to buy Brian a beer at a conference and sit down and have the conversation with him. I'll just leave it at that. That's probably the best way to leave the interview there. And like I said before, huge thanks to KPMG and to Brian for being good sports and coming on the Once Bitten podcast to talk about this. I know it can be a little bit difficult and a little bit, you know, you have to tread the company line in certain ways, and working with the guys on this one was a breeze. It really was. It was great to connect and to chat with Brian and his wider team. So I guess the underlying message here for anybody listening is, you know, are you that pleb in your corporation that's sitting there biting your tongue talking about Bitcoin when if you just put your head up and start talking about it, writing reports about it, if that's your thing, bringing it up in the boardroom, if that's your place, bringing it up in team meetings, in your Monday morning stand-ups, whatever it is, how much pushback are you really going to get? You know, and we need more people. We need more people inside these institutions, and we have Brian's work now to lean on, and there are other people out there doing incredible work as well. We have Freddie New over at the Bitcoin Policy Institute UK doing a lot of work, putting out a lot of research. You can go back a handful of episodes and listen to that one too. And people like this, they might give you that confidence to,
Here's the social proof of what's going on. Like, there is an incredible article here written by KPMG, released by KPMG, and Brian's not going to stop. There's going to be more coming out. So, like, the career risk now is being turned on its head. In fact, the career risk now for somebody sitting inside a chief risk officer or a chief financial officer or even in the accounting department, whatever, the career risk is to not be the person bringing this up to the attention of the people above you. Of course, there's been a lot of kind of fear based around that before. If you would have brought that up, you might have been the guy in the room putting a target on your back, but not anymore. That narrative is changing, and it's work from Brian and KPMG that is helping with that. And of course, now with the ETFs, you know, a lot of people view that as a risk off as well. But on that note, please don't buy ETFs. Please just buy Bitcoin. Find your local providers, Bitcoin only companies. You know where they are in the US, Swan. In Europe, Relay. Globally, Hodl Hodl. Use wasabiwallet.io if you want to perform a coin join. Very simple, it's done by default. Use a Bitbox 02, hit the link in the show notes. Use code BITTEN, get a 5% discount. Take self-custody very seriously. Use mempool.space to go and check the Bitcoin blockchain and the mempool and the fees. And then hit up Orange Pill app, find your plebs, come to Madeira. Use the code BITTEN pretty much anywhere you can find something, and hopefully that will get you a discount. Take care. Catch you on the next show.